Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, high school tennis fans. Welcome to the UR Tennis Network, where you find all your tennis news. This is your host, Coach Denise, bringing you the FHST perspective, FHSTCA perspective on high school tennis. Those of you that don't know, the FHSTCA is the tennis arm of the Florida Athletic Coaches Association. We are Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association, and we are proud to be part of this network for almost a year and a half now. We encourage all of you to talk to your tennis fans and tell them to tune into the UR 10 Word 10 Network, because this is where you'll find Chuck Reese, who was actually our guest today in his American Tennis Instructional Series, which I strongly recommend everybody to watch. Lisa Stone, who is a tennis parent, she brings you parenting aces, and she talks her tennis and from 10 and under up to college. We thank Jason Haynes for starting the network, I guess about 4 or 5 years ago or more, but I'd like to especially thank J.P. Weber and his We Coach Tennis program, because J.P. is now taking over as CEO of the UR Tens Network, and we need to get the message out about tennis. Our show is mostly about high school tennis. Of course, we'll go into some 10 and under stuff. We go into bringing you the heads of other organizations, and at least once a month we have a college coach on, because we hope to sit there and send our players on to college. Before we go into our show today, I'd like to thank everybody that was involved in bringing you the FHSTCA 5th Annual High School Senior Tournament at Winter Park, Florida. The Winter Park Tennis Facility, it was just a beautiful place to host the event. We have to thank Wilson Tennis, who's been with us since the beginning. They'll be with us in October when we do the Florida Athletic Coaches Association workshop. And they were with us again, too. We had Wilson goodies for all the players and coaches. And those Wilson goodies were in Dean Street Insurance backpacks. And Dean Street Insurance went the extra length this year, along with Roxanne Malone Dentistry, and brought all the players and coaches lunches for the tournament, and we appreciate them. Those of you that missed the tournament, I will tell you, you missed a good-looking group of players and coaches, because Team Connection, like they have in the past, have dressed the teams, and you know they look good when they're wearing Team Connections shirts. Team Connection is the same group that sits and gives out a free uniform every year to one of our high school teams in Florida. I probably shouldn't say free, because this year team will be earning points for next year, whoever wins it in 2017. They will have uniforms. We'll announce it in October in Orlando at the FACA workshop. You'll be able to see the uniforms. The Jane Hollinger team last year won the uniforms. Everybody was very impressed what they did, but this year, teams earns the points. You can go to our FHSTCA website, and then when you go to our resource page, go to team connection, and you will find out how to do that. Just like if you go to the resource page and go to Wilson, you will see how you nominate your high school coach for Coach of the Year Award. I've often said, please don't interrupt play or practice. If you have a complaint about a high school coach, set up an appointment, go see them. They'll address your issue. If you're unhappy, go to the athletic director. But if, like most of the players and parents, you are happy, by all means, nominate that coach for the High School Wilson Coach of the Year Award. We will be giving that award out again in the FHSAA 1A, 2A, 3A, and 4A districts, and nominate your coach. Make sure we're able to recognize them. Wilson will also be inducting for the first time two Hall of Fame entries this year. But let's get to our coach. Oh, before I did, let me answer some of the complaints. Some of you figured it out that we would not be giving out trophies to the winners, that we'll be giving out books. And you're right, we did give out a book. I've had a lot of people saying, I figured you're going to give out books, Coach, but what training manual did you give out? I'm not all about training all the time. Actually, the book that was given out was a hardcover book, The Hurricane Conspiracy by David and Nancy Beckwith, who donated the books. They'll be giving up some of the books in Orlando, too. It's time after the season end to take a little break, do some other reading, and then get back to the chores of tennis. But I see our guest on the line, I think. Coach, are you there? Let me see if I do this now. Coach, are you there? Hello? Okay, maybe I'm wrong, but let me see. Let me go on. As you know, I'm late getting into the 21st century, so you have to bear with me sometimes. But, Coach, are you there? Okay, well, let me tell you a little something about our guest. And actually, I had a few comments about that, too, because some people said, wow, you seem to be going from one extreme to the other. You have Linda LeClaire and Dr. Bryce Young on, and, you know, talking about her book, The Confidence Factor, and motivation. And then this week you have the legend Coach Chuck Creasy on. I'm going to suggest to you that, hang on a second, I think. Coach, are you there?
Yeah, John, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Coach. Before I let you fill in a couple of things, I was just commenting about, about my books. I never was a big trophy person. I was always a book person, and we gave them out again at the All-Star event. But those of you, I'm sure I'm not telling anybody anything new. Today's guest, I'm blessed to have a four-time National Coach of the Year. Coach Chuck Creasy is in the Clemson Hall of Fame. He's the author of six published books, including Coach in Tennis. If you listen to last week's show, we talked about Linda LeClaire book, The Confidence Factor, being part of our FHSTCA tennis team coaching certification program, which it is. Coaching tennis, when you look at that list of books to become a certified, well, I shouldn't say you become a certified tennis team coach for the FHSTAs, but as you move up the ladder, the suggestion readings, there's a half a dozen books that are at the highest point value. And coaching tennis is one of those books. That book there, you can get 5 points for our agreement with the human kinetics allows us to find out who gets them, who doesn't. But we are blessed today to have Chuck Creasy on. He is, if you're not listening to his American Tennis Show, you are really missing something. You have 30 years of Clemson coaching experience and the lessons learned he's talking about each week. And like I started to say, I think if you're a listener, you're going to find there's an awful lot of the same things are talked about with Dr. Bryce Young and Linda LeClaire in a different manner than Coach Chuck Creasy talks about. His book, Coaching Tennis, I'm into it at least once a week because I'll hear comments about, like I did last week, going to extremes, and say to myself, no, they're not, and I'll go back. And some things change. Change is difficult. I think change is necessary and good. But there's certain things that shouldn't change. And all you young coaches, you've heard me say it 1,000 times. I'll say it 1,001 times. If you're not reading Coaching Tennis by Chuck Creasy, you're missing out. Coach, welcome to the show today. And any comments you have before I ask you some questions?
Well, thank you, John, and for the work you do. And we are all very, very fortunate that Coach J.P. Weber is new CEO of the UR Tennis Network. And your program, my program, and a couple others are able to keep rolling here. And, of course, the American Tennis Program, fourth year. I think, John, though, you are really breaking all the records. I checked out your listeners, and you, my golly, you are really serving a great need, and it's just a great way to get the word out about everything that's going on out there and to have people on, and it's a great tool, an educational tool, entertainment tool, and you're pretty much like me, John. The technology is pretty interesting, but boy, we're sort of luckiest there. But thank you for what you do and all the people that you really touch. And, we're very fortunate. But anyhow, no, I heard you talking about just very briefly about the book. And thank you very, very much. Yeah, I've got 6 books, 4 tennis, and then 2 actually. When I, the last 10 years at Clemson, I was fortunate enough to be able to do a history of Clemson athletics along with the sports information director, and that was, research was fantastic. We did a 110-year history of Clemson athletics, which was a lot of fun to do. But my first book, Total Tennis Training, was 1987. And John, I was telling my son earlier today, I had when I go on the road, I take a book or two with me, and I'm on the road today. I'm heading up actually on a fishing trip up to Tennessee. But I said, son, I hand wrote this. We didn't have computers, and I remember the process. It was about a 10-year process of, and a lot of work. But in those days, we didn't have computers. I said, son, I took the pictures. I drew the diagrams, and I wrote it all out. And every day that I worked on it, John, I always ask, that if I was playing tennis at the park like I did, I never had a tennis lesson growing up, John. I learned how to play at the park on the backboard and just pick things up. And made mistakes and corrected them and went on and just was fortunate to have some good people around, some people at the park and things like that. It helped me over the years. But I said, if I was at the park learning again and I wanted to, and what would I want to know? And then I put, of course, the things that I learned in my college coaching and the other experiences that I had in there. And it came together I'm very, very proud of the Total Tennis Training that became the Coaching Tennis Book. The Coaching Tennis Book was written about 10 years later. I did have computers. I took the Total Tennis Training and I redid most of it, updated it, and was able to, it was quite a bit easier than the first one. So I didn't, I don't know how you have time to do that other than just like being a teacher or anything else. You get up in the morning, and I dedicated about, an hour a day earlier, just got up over a period of time and worked on it. But, it's really interesting out there now, though. John, I just want to make this comment. There's so much information that I want to put this in the right context. On the way up, I was talking to a coach today on the phone, and he said, what's the hardest thing about coaching? I said, well, the hardest thing is that there's so much information out there. It's like drinking water out of a fire hose. The kids, you try to get them to believe in a cause or to believe in a situation, to have some goals and go after it. And they have so much information. It's like drinking water out of a fire hose. They don't know quite what to hang on to, quite what to believe. And what it was a coach who had worked with many, many years ago. And I said, I used to be able to tell you and other players, I used to be able to give you a vision and say, let's go do this. And the saying used to be that with young players, you keep fog on top of the mountain till the kids are too high up to turn back. In other words, it's important. It's not important for them to know how hard something is to do. As a matter of fact, it's detrimental to know how hard something is to do. It was very important to act on faith before you acted on knowledge and reality of how hard something was. Because, and in answering the question of what the hardest job is now, John, is that the kids can figure it out. They size it up. They can get on Google or their computers or something, and they can figure out how hard things are before they start. And you never want to know how hard a journey is sometimes before you do it. If you do, it takes away from the great dreams that we go after. And so I wanted to throw that in at the start. For any coach, we all have this problem. People are mired in reality checks now. They want to know how much pain for how much gain, how much effort for how much reward, how much time will it take me, how much will this cost me, how do I go about doing this? And they, the critical thing is for coaches is to, the motivation starts with why they want to go after things more than how to do it and what to do. But the point is they kids don't should not know how hard things are before they go after it. There's a beautiful thing in the innocence of children that they you can tell them you can go out and be anything you want to be, and 2 weeks ago, we were going through a rough spot, and I said, the tragedy, guys, I grew up in 1960, I was born before then, but in 1960, I remember John F. Kennedy saying, we will go to the moon in this decade. Before the decade of the 1960s is over, we will land the men on the moon and bring them back safely. And I remember in 1969, exactly where I was, when Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon, and they came back. And we went after this, and I told all my team, I said, you guys got to go watch the movie, The Right Stuff, and see how these guys were brought up, the Chuck Yeagers, through the test pilot program. And you guys have got to see
that we just went after crazy, wild adventures. Matter of fact, going to the moon. And so, you know, if to any of the high school coaches out there, to any of the coaches, I would say to you, this is our biggest obstacle. This is the thing that we have to overcome. It's not about having a special system or a well-planned-out pathway and checking off numbers or getting this many points or getting this ranking. It's for our kids to have dreams and to go after them and to believe and to have faith. Faith is belief without seeing, and to go for things. So, John, in starting out today, I wanted to make that point because just a couple hours ago I was talking to one of my former players about this, and it just resonates in my mind about the void that we have, and this is what's going on. So I hope that makes sense there to you.
Well, it makes sense to me, and I appreciate where you started from, and I think as coaches we have to remember. I think I've done this enough now to know that, you know, weekly I'll get somebody coming out with an article or a book, and they want to us to support it, and they know that that's a big part of the FHSTCA. And I sit there, and I think you have to be careful. You throw so many stuff out there, and like you said before, you can Google it. And what I've done, and like I said, I use your book a lot because I go back and just, really, for instance, what you were just talking about, I go back to when I went to one of the first PTR meetings with my son, and they were all young coaches. This is, you know, 25 plus, 26, 27 years ago. And, you know, I was ready to go home. And I'm sitting there saying, looking at all these young people, and back then I was old, and I had a person tell me, because the person at nighttime we were sitting ready to have, they were having drinks together, and somebody said, "Mr. Denise, what do you think?" And I said, "I'm thinking about going back home." He said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, look at everybody so young, and there's so much information, and I'm old." And they said, "Well, you're a basketball coach." And I said, "Yes." And the thing is, if you know how to coach, if you're going to be involved in coaching, you don't want to just be a tennis pro. And that's when I was first introduced with your book, and they suggested, it was a person I respect, I won't bring his name in, I go back and I remember when I get in your book, and I still have the book I have now, is one you autographed. I've given away dozens of your books, but you go back and you talk about, some complain about the bricks that are thrown at them during the pursuit of excellence. Others use those bricks to build on. And I think today we're in much of a hurry. You know, we watch shows and we solve problems in a half an hour or an hour, and we forget that this is a tough process. And that's, you know, I love what you're saying is when you start with the younger ones, because coaching is different from all levels. You have to sit there, hook them on the game first before you start getting them, letting them know what it takes to be a tennis player.
Well, yeah, that's right, John. The love of the game is the most important thing. I think that's the other thing is that the goals that you go after, they're always going to be there. I mean, people are going to be goal-oriented. But loving the game to a level that allows you to hold up and withstand all of the losing that you have to do and all of the tough times is the critical thing. And, you know, I've very often said, hey, listen, I played tennis when I was a child for the three drugs that I got. And people go, what? No, I said, no, dopamine, adrenaline, and endorphins. Dopamine. We absolutely, with those old rackets, those old wood rackets, when you hit the ball right, it sent, wow, there was a feeling. It was like swishing a basket. It was like the crack of a baseball bat. It was like when the fish hit your line. I'm thinking about fishing. I'm going fishing this weekend up in the. I'm going to be in a mountain stream in Tennessee. But the point being is that rush of, you know, that you would get from that feeling, you know, of hitting the ball. That was enough really to keep me going many, many a day playing tennis and hitting off the backboard. You would hit off the backboard and you would absolutely just search for that sweet spot. And if you missed, you said, wow, tennis is hard. And if you hit that sweet spot, it was a feeling like no other. So it was sort of a plus neutral of best or worst that could happen. And I always have argued that the technology took that dopamine rush away, because it's sort of like when kids miss now, they're mad. And if they hit it perfectly, well, you know, I'm sort of supposed to. So it's sort of a neutral negative, if you know what I mean. But yep. The dopamine rush, then the adrenaline from competing was another part of it. By the way, dopamine grows exponentially. It just grows and grows and grows. The more you do it, the more you want it. It's a fantastic feeling that keeps you coming back. But the adrenaline, some people have a lot of adrenaline for competition, other people do not. Some people just do not like competition. I have always said, when I talk to parents, they said, was my child competitive enough? I'd say, well, 30% of the kids are natural competitors, and they do it real well. 30%, it's hard to ever get them going in the right direction. About 40% of the kids have to learn how to compete in the right way. So, you know, the adrenaline's different, and then the endorphins would come as you got in shape and you just love the feeling of competing and playing. So that's part of the love of the game. So the journey was with that. I wanted to mention also there was a definitive moment for my coaching in 1980, a young man sitting in the audience of National Teachers Conference in New York, Roosevelt Hotel, 1980. Clarence Mabry was the coach of Trinity for years, and he had they had tremendous teams at Trinity University, always top five in the country. So I, of course, being a young coach at Clemson, wanted to be in there and listen to what Coach Mabry had to say. And Coach Mabry, the question came up, Coach Mabry, what is the most important quality of a championship tennis player? And, of course, I was out there saying, wow, is he going to say the big forehand, you know, everybody said, or to serve this or this a different thing. He scratched his head and he said, you know what? I absolutely believe that the most important quality of a championship tennis player is the hunger of an inquisitive mind. And that floored me, and I have never forgotten his words and saying the hunger of an inquisitive mind. And when you work with children, those that where their mind is inquisitive, where they're always trying to figure it out, how do I hit my backhand better? How do I hit my forehand better? Do I need to be in better shape? Coach, what do I need to do here? Coach, what I do? And the inquisitive mind comes also. It doesn't come from looking stuff up on Google every time you have a problem or from a parent or a teacher just giving you every answer or every opportunity. Or every pathway. It comes a lot from denial of success until you're ready to go forward. And what I mean by that, John, is that this game at every level, there's many, many levels, but at every level, the challenges are to go forward are first met with rejection and denial and losing and hardship. It's almost like, and there are no tennis gods, but I use the term tennis gods a lot. I said, it's almost like the tennis gods will not let you go forward until you've paid the price of loving the game enough, working hard enough, and having an inquisitive mind that you will challenge yourself to learn more about the game. And then, and only then, are you able to go forward? So that was a very definitive moment for me, John, when with the coach Clarence Mabry, who passed away about 2 years ago. And but the hunger of an inquisitive mind. So that speaks to what you're talking about, John, about the most important thing being a deep, deep love of the game. And then you climb the mountain, and then, of course, you're going to want to be better. And then, of course, with the love of the game, and then you're going after these goals, it's very important that the kids do not, they're not given everything all at once, that there is, there, and again, fog on top of the mountain until the kids are too high up to turn back, I think is very, very important.
I think one of your outstanding shows, maybe you could just expand on it a little, and we were just talking about it, it was parity without work is not good. Would you like to continue with that or no?
Right, sure, I'd be glad to talk, anything like that, John. But anything that you accomplish that you have not worked for, you quickly let go. We all know this. What you work for, you're humble with, first of all, but you also respect greatly, and you also value. The most important thing about hard work in order to accomplish something is that you value it once you have earned it, and you own it. You own your tennis game. The quick story is a young man walking up to me at one of my camps about three or four summers ago, and his stroke is okay on the backhand side. It's not beautiful, but he's got a pretty good forehand. He came up, Coach, can you show me what I need to do on my backhand side? And this was about, and then I showed him a few things, and then, of course, he was like, he wanted some magic gimmick, or something, some magic. And I said, look, it's really, really simple. When you hit that backhand enough times on the backboard to where your hands are calloused, blistered, and even bleeding, then you will have a backhand. the point being is that we have to bleed or blister or ache in many, many ways in order to really understand the level this game can take us to. And recently I was on my radio show, I was talking about the pain of losing and how very valuable it is. Nobody likes the pain of losing, but the pain is what teaches us. And, in the end, if I could name one thing that separates the best players I've ever coached from the others, is those that get really, really good are the ones that hate losing the most, John. They absolutely dislike it, and they'll go back to the practice court again and again and again so that it doesn't happen very often. Then there's, enjoying winning but hating losing. You have to have both of those to go forward in this game. I'm trying to think of the program. Go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to say, I couldn't agree more. And, often I remember my wife Bobby's mother, God bless her soul, when she was like, I used to always pray for patience. And she always told me, you talk about the tennis gods. Linda LeClaire talks about her conversations. God speaks to women too. And she always says, don't ever pray for patience because it's the one thing God won't give you. And you talked in one of your shows about the passion to do and the patience to wait. Have you really, will we find the patience?
Well, again, the passion to do, the patience to wait for the fruit of our labor. I think passion to do it comes from, it starts with the love of the sport. This sport is 30 layers deep. It's an incredible sport. That's why it's so aggravating to me when they try to dumb it down. And this is a completely different topic, but you know how I feel. I'm so, so upset, and I'm doing everything I can possibly do to get the word out to coaches, players, teachers, to please fight these 10-point tiebreakers, and please fight this no-ad scoring system. easy to pick up is easy to put down. Hard to pick up is hard to put down. Do not make our chess game of tennis into checkers. It is a deep, deep game. It's a lifelong, I don't want to say an addiction, a lifelong passion. And without the depth of the game, kids will not have the passion to stay with it for a long, long time. They will not. Simple success and winning trophies and things will blow away very fast. This will not be the hook that stays in the kid's mouth. When you dumb down the game, John, first of all, the 10-point tiebreaker is an atrocity because all the learning takes place in the third set, and we're taking this away from the kids. I argued with the USTA, if it's just about time, play the tiebreaker the first set. We're going to count it as a whole set. Play a tiebreaker for the first set, full set for second, full set for third. If you have to do it that way, or start it 2-2 in the first set, full set, I mean, you've got to play a full set for that third set. That's where kids do all the learning. Physically, they have to get tough, and mentally, they have to go through a lot as well. And then the NOAD scoring, don't get me started on that, but that's a complete, that's an atrocity, what they're doing there. It just diminishes the game. But the passion to do it comes from the depth of the game and the love affair you have with it. Now, the patience to wait for the fruit of your labor, the argument that people use in dumbing the game down right now is, oh, everybody is they have very small concentration, they have less concentration, their attention threshold is less. Everything's got to be short. We've got to cater to people have not changed. People have not changed at all. What's changed is our ability to massively, with our communication, to first of all be aware of every hiccup that ever happens, and to basically keep score in so many ways. Again, most of the things we do is not because we should, John. It's because we can, like ranking 500 kids. This is not good. You know, you don't. When you rank 500 kids, we only do it because we can, not because we should. But when you rank, I'll give you a good example. They rank 75 teams in college tennis. Do you know, people say, well, why not? Well, if you're ranked 68 and you're coaching at a major SEC or ACC university, you might get fired because, you know, there's visibility to where you're at. Almost every coach would rather have 20 or 25 teams ranked, and that's all. So the argument when you rank 500 kids, John, is kids, it's funny. A kid will say, well, I was ranked 453 and I moved up to 396. Well, that sounds good, but really what we're saying is that, you know, we're getting participation trophies here, and we're looking for anything we can to measure some level of excellence. And again, it's a dumb down. Most of the dumb downs are done because we can, not because we should. The passion to do comes because our sport is deep, and it's the violin in the orchestra. And what we have done is we've cheapened it to where it's like playing the tuba in the band. And if anybody is out there, it's a tuba player in the band. I'm not demeaning that, but I'm saying it's not the equivalent of playing the violin in the orchestra, you know, that takes years and years to master. So the patience to wait, of course, is taught little by little that any great player has wanted to quit the game 40 times because it's so frustrating at times. But so as a musician, so as a painter, so as an author, so as anything that is of depth, the person who's doing science in the laboratory, you have to fail over and over and over and over again before you get things where they need to be, John. So that's it's just part of what needs to happen with our youngsters to develop the passion. A zeal for the task is passion, you know, a willingness to persevere through hardships, the passion to do, the patience to understand that, you know what, I'm working now for 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. And so in the be process oriented, not product, you know, driven most of the time, John.
Well, I couldn't agree more with you, and I think there's a lot of people who couldn't agree. I know we just 2 weeks ago got through with our FHSAA state championships in Florida, and my phone rang off the wall, people complaining. Matter of fact, next week our guest will be a high school coach, Mike Kypris, who's won the state championships 17 times, I think, over the years. His biggest complaint is that doing away with doubles and the no-add score and everything. So I think there's a lot of people that believe that, and there's just, it's not, sometimes we're afraid to speak. And that's why I think on our show, like yours, I mean, the following week we have Dan Santorum on our show after Mike Kypris, the CEO of the PTR. I'm sure he's going to have a different view. And Andy Brandy, the ex-Florida coach who's doing the juniors for the high performance coaching for the USTA beyond the 26th. It'll be interesting to hear what he said. But, you know, it's important, I think, as for coaches, as that we sit there and be willing to listen, and not listen just to our point, but listen to the whole conversation. I often talk about remark, I'm not a Greek philosopher by no means, but I remember a phrase that just stays out in my mind. It is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. And I think, you know, sometimes people just have their own agenda, and they're not really willing to listen to people that have a point of view and have a lot of facts to support their hypothesis.
Right. And John, I wanted to point this out. And again, the quotes I use a lot of times about the Thomas Jefferson quote: in matters of principle, you stand like a rock. In matters of method, you can flow with the stream or flow with the stream. And the point being is that, John, our scoring system is 141 years. Anybody out there listening to this program, our scoring system is 141 years old. It is our most sacred heirloom. It is our most sacred heirloom. If you dump the scoring system, you have dumped the base of tennis. Now, I've had the conversation, and there's some very good coaches out there that will swear that no ad scoring does this or that, and it's more exciting or this or that. Again, I've published 22 things that show why it is not. Not just that it's 141 years old, but they'll say, well, why are you against progress? No, there's some things that are bedrock principles that you need to stand with. When you take the scoring system right now, the way you can manipulate no ad, or you manipulate the 10-point tiebreaker thing, becomes more important than the skill, all of the skill sets you need physically or mentally. But the point is, a lot of learned people will argue as strongly as I do for no ad, but they'll argue for traditional scoring. They will argue for no ad, saying that, oh, we're going to save tennis. And I do not, for the life of me, see how they can get past that one fundamental thing that it's 141 years old. And how dare us? How dare us? I mean, are you kidding me? The game is not going to go away because of the scoring system. This is an agenda, John, I fear, by the USTA, by the ITA, but it's an agenda that is somebody's within the organization that has not thought through it deep enough, nor done the research, because you can imagine, my son plays baseball. The best example I could use is you use 3 balls, 2 strikes, and no foul balls allowed. In every at-bat, you're only allowed, 7
pitches
to swing. 5 pitches. And this would change the whole dynamic of the drama of the battle of the sport. If we take the drama out, one of the arguments that they will use about no at is that, oh, it's so exciting. I said, no, it's not about excitement. Come on now, excitement is shallow. Drama is deep. Excitement diminishes with each occurrence. In other words, if you ride a roller coaster the first time, it's exciting. Second time, it's sort of exciting. Third time, you say, I've already been there. Let's go to the Ferris wheel. And whereas traditional scoring, the drama, excitement dwindles with each occurrence. Drama intensifies with each denial. The drama of the at-bat, the long at-bats, the drama of that service game that you have to hold, the drama of trying to carry a lead in tennis, learning how to carry a lead when you're ahead is a skill that takes a long, long time. The war zones, the depth of the game. So what we're doing is we're changing chess into checkers. We're changing the violin into a fiddle. I can go on and on. But, John, 141 years should be enough to convince people that let's not mess with this wonderful, wonderful game. There are other things they could do if it is absolutely the reason why they want to change is to make it shorter. There are so many ways to do it. I gave them, in the committee I was on for the USTA, I wasn't renewed after a couple years on the committee. Basically, I would speak up very often against some of these things, and the point being is that I gave them 11 different ways you can score. Over 40 years of coaching, believe me, at practices, I've used a lot of different ways of scoring matches, and the easiest is, you could, if you don't want to do that 10-point tiebreaker, start the third set at 2-2, or 3-3. That's
right.
Fine. Then you have a score. Or play the first set at 3-3. Or, if you have to use a 10-point tiebreaker, play the 10-point tiebreaker the first set. Then you give the better player a chance to win with a tiebreaker and a full set. The better player loses a lot of times in that method, and that's what the problem is too, is when you skew results, John, when you skew results randomly and you enter randomness into the equation, what you do, you take away from the child's need and hunger and inquisitive mind to develop their skills in order to win, because there's so much randomness. There is no benefit to go out and run more to get in better shape. There is no benefit to being able to persevere through hardship and everything that this tennis game should be. My son plays baseball. I just want to throw this in. I have a 10-year-old son. I have four sons, 2 daughters, 6 children. But my son who plays baseball, he's 10. And we, last weekend, he plays travel ball. He had 2 games on Saturday, 3 games back on Sunday. And I said, here we go. Now we're stretching them. Now we're stretching the kids. And were the kids tired? Yeah, they were tired at the end. They ended up, finishing second in this little tournament and everything. And parents were happy. The kids were exhausted. The parents were happy. But those kids learned a lot about their ability to dig down and find different levels. So I don't know if we'll ever develop another American champion if we treat them like hothouse flowers. We treat all of our very best players like hothouse flowers, and we have to have such a controlled environment, John, that we're not stretching them. And when there's no way that when I watch Djokovic and the Wawrinkas and the Nadals and everybody play, I go, no way we will ever have another champion to compare with those guys if we keep we don't stretch our kids from the start. It's just mind-boggling to me that people do not see the correlation between hard work and suffering on the court and suffering in practice to excellence at a higher level. You know, it is just mind-boggling to me. So matters of principle stand like a rock. John, we need to stand with 141 years of tradition because it's worked and it's kept the sport alive through thick and thin. And listen, matters of method, this is not a matter of method. Matter of method is much smaller things. We're cutting out the very core of our game to diminish the scoring system. It's an atrocity, to say the least.
Well, Coach, we've just about shot a whole hour, but I can tell you this. Mike Kuipers and I have our next week's guest. He is – a lot of people get mad at me when I ask the question, is your high school tennis an after-school activity or is it an after-school
sport?
And he's one of those people that believe it should be a varsity sport. I think he has some of the same views that we have. And that doesn't make it right. I tell people, listen, express your views. I give everybody a chance to express their views on it. I just ask you, don't be derogatory and just try to make sure you have enough facts to support your argument.
Right.
But I think sometimes at the USTA, we haven't separated recreation from competition enough, and there is a difference, and we have to understand that. And I'm not sure the business aspect of it. I spent 8 years on the USTA Florida Board of Directors, and I always told Doug Booth that, you know, Doug, you don't know it, but you need me. Because every organization that's successful usually has 10% of their board that are pains. They're always challenging. They're always going to challenge. And, you know, I don't see anybody else challenging here but me. So, you know, someday you're going to appreciate me.
John, people out there believe the same way that we do. They just don't know how to have a voice. And to be fair, the USTA very often does not want to hear the voice. There is an agenda, is a definite agenda going on, and those are good and noble people. But again, bureaucracies, once they get going in the same certain direction, it's hard to turn them. But here's the point, and the coaches out there, listen to what I'm saying. There's a time for participation. There's a time for performance. Participation activities are participation activities. Hopefully, as kids get older, they become more performance-driven. Team tennis is more of a participation activity at the earlier stages, and it is a wonderful, wonderful thing, even at the college level. However, you need tournament tennis as well as part of the ingredient, as part of the program, because that is a performance-driven sport or a performance-driven event. You need to have every month or something tournaments, coaches, to where your top can stand out and walk away and know that they are the top one out there. And I'll give you just a very quick thing here. Golf. We play medal playing golf. Up until the 1960s, match play was done at the collegiate level. That means that a number four person would play 18 holes against the number four person. Now, the tragedy in that, or the negative in it, is that that number four person always would have to be a number four person. Now, with medal play, the number four person can pop up and be the hero of the weekend. That's what tournament tennis does as well. Tournament tennis allows you to grow exponentially when you succeed. You only fall arithmetically when you don't do well. when in dual match tennis, you only grow arithmetically a little bit of the time when you win at a number four spot, but you often fall exponentially. But understand, there's a reason for both of them. There is a place for both of them, and I'm not saying only do tournament tennis, but there has to be a spot in high school tennis for tournaments and for kids to know that I'm the leader of the pack and I'm the top dog here. So that I wanted to get that in, John. And look, it should not be an after-school activity. This no-cut tennis and things. You know what? I don't cut players in college either, but there's standards that they have to work for. And many, 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 many quit. You make it hard enough to where unless the kids want to pay a price, they'll quit. You don't have to. And the point being is that it should not be an after-school activity. When you dumb it down, easier to pick up, easier to put down. When you make it hard and you cut kids and you make a big you raise the bar, well, then the kids will fight to get over that bar. They are just naturally competitive, and I believe that's what you're looking for.
I don't think there's any question about that. And I hope you listeners today tell your friends to listen to this here, and also tell your especially your coaches. We're blessed to have Coach Greasy today, but we're also blessed to have him in October. He's going to be our keynote presenter at the Florida Athletic Coaches Association workshop in Orlando. And, of course, we will, like we have for the last 15 years, we'll be doing the training of the High School Tennis Coaches Association. I will have the agenda out, not in the next issue of Florida Tennis Magazine, but in the following issue. You'll have plenty of time, but I'm sure that you see why you should be at the October workshop. This is just part of what we will be doing. There'll be a lot of encore presentations. Coach Greasy is going to do both an encore, and I think his wisdom is something that all of us share. And like I said, I go through coaching tennis probably once a week. I'm into that book. And when I do get books to review, to sit in, do we put them on our certification program? Usually I'll look and I'll compare to what's in there because there's a lot of stuff out there. I think you should listen to it all, but you have to be careful. You just don't give your players too much. You have to become your own personality, who you are. Probably the reason I have a love affair with Coach Chuck Greasy is because he believes in some of the same principles I do. You have to find out who you are, and then you have to adopt your coaching philosophy to go along with that. And what we will try to do on this show and what we try to do in our workshop is to give you different perspectives on that. So keep an open mind. Hopefully I will see you in October. Wilson will have will be a big part of that. Yes, go ahead, Coach.
John, just real quick, my website's chuckcreasy.net, K-R-I-E-S-E.net. You can get my books and different things or my writings, chuckcreasy.net, or go to Amazon for coaching tennis. Okay, ChuckCreasy.net. Thank you, John. Thank you. God bless you for the work you're doing.
Thank you, Coach. And I look forward to talking with everybody again next week. By the way, those 22 items Coach Chuck Greasy was talking about, you can find them in the last issue of Florida Tennis Magazine in the opinion section there. Like I said, next week we will have Mike Kuypers on, the following week Dan Santorum on, David Barron, Andy Brandy will be coming on. I think we have June some outstanding shows coming up. Tell your friends, go listen to American especially your young coaches, listen to the UR10 Network. There's a lot of great information there. Have a blessed week, and I will talk with you again next week. Bye now.